By the end of his war against Iran in 1988, the country is in the red for $40 billion. It is precisely at this time, starting in 1988, when Iraq is most desperate to maximize its oil income, that yet another crisis begins unfolding.
International oil market analyst Suhin Lee.
OPEC keeps the price of oil stable by limiting how much oil each OPEC member country can produce. In 1989, after the end of the Iraq-Iran war, Kuwait suddenly exceeds its quotas by 20%, driving the price of oil down on the world market. As a result of Kuwait's production hike, Iraq lost almost 1/3 of its oil income. And this was at a time when Iraq was desperate for money. So the Iraqis felt that Kuwait was stabbing them in the back.
Welcomed by the West, this move by Kuwait hurts both Iraqis' economy and pride, as they remember that Kuwait used to be part of their country before it was carved off by the British in 1928. Over the following months, tension escalates to the point of Saddam Hussein publicly threatening Kuwait. Given that Kuwait remains one of the primary oil suppliers to the West, the official response of the US State Department to Saddam's saber-rattling is rather surprising.
A US government intelligence report dated 8 days prior to Iraq's invasion of Kuwait states, Baghdad continues to move forces toward the Kuwaiti border.
A U.S. State Department briefing 6 days prior to Iraq's invasion of Kuwait.
There are no special defense or security commitments to Kuwait.
Rhonda Habib, Agence France-Presse, Jordan.
The Americans had given indirectly an encouragement to Saddam Hussein to invade Kuwait.
If the Middle East stability is indeed a desirable goal for all, why did the West fuel such a brutal dictator as Saddam Hussein with credits, weapons, and advanced technologies? And why would the US State Department repeatedly tell Saddam that it has no defense agreement with Kuwait?
David Welch, US State Department.
You know, it should come as no surprise that at the end of one war, and to reduce the threat that we saw in this region from the consequences of that conflict, that we would seek to direct either party in a more productive way, including Iraq.
Marwan al-Qassem, former Jordanian foreign minister.
I do not say that what Iraq committed in invasion of Kuwait is something that is acceptable to any of the Arab countries. No, it is not. But the way and the attitude that preceded the crisis made everyone feel that there must have been other plans to entrap Iraq into this situation. It is a trap. Unfortunately, Iraq fell in it.
On August the 2nd, 1990, convinced the US government would not interfere, Saddam Hussein invades Kuwait. While US officials publicly express shock and surprise, the Pentagon is ready for action, having rehearsed this very situation for several months prior to Iraq's attack on Kuwait.
General Norman Schwarzkopf.
We went ahead and did an exercise, what's called a command post exercise, which is what internal look was, to test our ability to deal with this particular scenario and also to uncover any command and control problems that might exist, any doctrine problems that might exist between the Air Force and the Navy and the Army forces. And it just so happened that we were in the middle of conducting the internal look command post exercise at the same time that the crisis developed in the Gulf.
U.S. Marine Morocco Amari.
Prior to that, when I was doing my training, all the officers was telling us about the buildup, the thing with Iraqi possibly going through Kuwait and attacking Kuwait. And they told us to be prepared for it because it's very serious. They said that they've been knowing this for about 2 years prior to this, you know. So a lot of this stuff was already going on, that they knew that they were probably gonna, you know, and they were preparing us to go over to Desert Storm.
Hardly a few hours after Saddam's invasion, All Iraqi assets in the U.S. are frozen, and the U.S. Navy starts enforcing a blockade of the Iraqi coast even before the UN gets a chance to convene. A couple of days later, delegations from the U.S. Departments of State and Defense fly to Riyadh to try to convince the Saudi government that the Iraqi troops are indeed threatening their borders. The official press release mentions showing the Saudis' satellite picture evidence of the Iraqi buildup at the Saudi border.
The Defense Department never made public any photographs that proved their point, and I doubt that they exist.
In January 1991, the St. Petersburg Times, along with ABC, runs a story based on commercial satellite pictures that happen to have been taken over Kuwait and Saudi Arabia at the time of Saddam's invasion of Kuwait.
Investigative reporter Gene Heller.
The airport in the Kuwaiti capital appeared to have been abandoned, which it wouldn't be. You think about it a minute. If you're trying to supply 250,000 troops, that takes a lot of food, a lot of camping equipment, a lot of fuel for the tanks. They did not see tank tracks in the sand in the desert, and they would not have worn away because satellite photos are still picking up images of sand tracks in the desert of northern Africa that were left during World War II. So I said, I happened to know the press secretary to the Secretary of Defense personally, and I asked him, look, you know me, we've known each other for a long time. Let me come into your office and look at some of the U.S. intelligence photos. Prove to me that I'm wrong. I don't need to take them out of the building. I don't need to copy them. Prove to me that we're wrong and we won't run the story. And he refused to do that. He refused to do it on a number of occasions. Everyone else who has seen, who was familiar with this story and familiar with the satellite photographs, has concluded that the administration lied to the Saudis, to the world, in order to get the invitation to come into the Middle East to protect the innocent. What does it say about the government? If in fact the government lied, does that surprise anyone?
If indeed the U.S. government misled the Saudis about the Iraqis threatening their borders, what was the purpose? Ever since World War II, the U.S. administration had been making countless efforts to convince the Saudis to allow the largely Christian U.S. troops into the Holy Land of Mecca, supposedly to protect Saudi Arabia, but namely to secure its vast oil fields. Ever since OPEC raised the price of oil in the early 70s, this concern has become even more acute. Epitomized by State Secretary Henry Kissinger's famous statement, "Oil is too important to be left to the Arabs."
Desert Storm Commander General Norman Schwarzkopf.
Well, you have to understand that there were principal focuses of the world of military commands. You had the focus of the European command on the NATO situation. You had the focus of the Pacific Command, for instance, on the Pacific, the Atlantic Command on the battle in the Atlantic. But there were certain areas of the world that had no focus. The Middle East was one area. The problem was that no Arab country wanted a major U.S. military headquarters in their country.
In 1990, the Bush administration was trying to convince the Saudis that this threat from the Iraqis was real because we couldn't go in there. The allies, the British, the French, the Americans, and the others, couldn't go in there without an invitation from the Saudis. The Saudis had to feel threatened in order to invite the Allies to come in for protection.
On August the 7th, 1990, the Saudi government officially accepts the insisting protection offer from Washington. The very next day, the U.S. military steamroller starts flying in without even notifying Congress. Within a few months, over 500,000 American troops would be deployed in Saudi Arabia. After persuading the Saudis, the U.S. government now has to convince the American public and the world that the threat is real and that it justifies a gigantic U.S. military buildup in Saudi Arabia.